This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
All right, so we live in an environment immersed with technology. We make many of our purchase decisions online. We interact with algorithms on our favorite devices, and we travel with internet-connected devices in our pockets. How can we take actions that allow us to reap the benefits of using technology while avoiding negative consequences associated with frequent use? Today, we're going to discuss what I've found in my experimental work that speaks to a strategy for navigating decisions in a digital world. So first, I want to start with the claim that technological progress will not slow down. Back in 1965, a computer engineer named Gordon Moore noticed that the number of tiny switches called transistors on a computer chip doubled about every 2 years. More transistors means more powerful computing. We see that this pattern in computing power translates to the technological innovations that we see and eventually to technologies that we adopt. For example, we've seen consistent growth in the percentage of US individuals that use the internet, which has now reached about 96% since 2024. Businesses are investing heavily in AI to automate tasks and influence decision-making. In fact, over 60% of companies now embed AI into at least one business function. As more people and systems rely on these technologies, there becomes an incentive to stay connected. As a result, we have situations that look like this.
What the? What, 5 minus 3 equals 2.
Boy! So when technology is new and unfamiliar, we lean towards oversimplified decisions to either entirely use it or entirely avoid it. However, if we probe deeper into these reactions, we can see a possible logic, whether or not it's known to those individuals. The boy has a goal of completing his homework quickly and correctly. This decision to use digital assistants is therefore strategic. On the other hand, we see a reaction from his mom that was kind of negative, possibly because, to some extent, she may understand that if he is relying on technology, he's not able to learn on his own. So in either case, in order to make good decisions about whether to use technology, it requires a pretty intelligent understanding of the consequences associated with each use. If there's no understanding, then this becomes a baseless reaction that will not help us determine when and how to use technology in the long run. So this leads us to our problem domain. Internet skill is not equally distributed. People have varying abilities to appropriately determine when to use technology and how to use it in a way that serves them best. Yet, people with stronger internet skills are more likely to access jobs, they're more likely to apply for positions, they're more likely to engage in remote work. As students, they're more likely to participate in virtual classrooms, they're more likely to use online resources, and they're more likely to develop digital literacies that will help them in their future academic and professional ventures. And people with stronger internet skills are better positioned to maintain relationships across time and distance, which is becoming more and more important to how we form and maintain our relationships. So ultimately, though, people tend to know too little about how to use the internet to realize that they don't know a lot, which stifles their desire to develop these strategic skills. And these strategic skills are difficult to develop, whereas operational and formal skills, skills like how to use the internet, how to make sense of a cyberspace, are things that can be taught through educational programs. The strategic and informational skills to know when misinformation is on the rise, to know when to use technology to achieve our goals, is something that tends to happen from frequent and complex use. In fact, students who have come from who are able to attend college tend to have some of the best strategic skill because they're they have an opportunity to use technology in a way that's quite flexible to serve their goals. So my philosophy as a media researcher is to acknowledge that each of us is immersed unavoidably in a digital world. Therefore, we should be teaching ourselves and our children to shift questions from whether or not to use the internet or technology more generally to when and how to use it to achieve particular goals. To do that, it requires each of us to understand the effect that technology has on our thinking and our behavior so that we can protect ourselves from the possible harm associated with media use. But knowing only technology's effects on our thinking and behavior is not necessarily enough, because in order to enact those strategies that you know about how to use technology well, it requires good metacognition. So metacognition is the ability to be aware of how you learn, how you think and solve problems, and then use that awareness to make smarter choices. It's, in other words, people think of it as thinking about thinking, whether you have the ability to think through accurately about yourself and the situation that you're in. And metacognition is a concept from cognitive psychology. It was developed to understand the difficulty that we tend to have studying for an exam. In order to do well on an exam, a student has to decide what strategies are going to be most effective for memorizing the material for the exam, and they have to make decisions about when it's time to study more or to stop studying. And this literature tells us that students, people in general, tend to have faulty models about making decisions about what they know and what they don't. And this gets compounded, this gets worse, when we consider our interactions with media. We see a similar pattern in media use where on a daily basis, we each have to make decisions about how and how much to use technology to meet our cognitive, social, and economic needs. And like studying for an exam, the strategies that we use do not tend to come naturally to us and must be taught. So today we're going to take this opportunity to learn about how reliance on technology influences our thoughts and behaviors. And I'm going to share some of my empirical research that gives us answers to three general questions. First, what happens to our ability to understand ourselves when we over-rely on technology? How does interacting with personalized technology influence our decisions? And how can we use technology in a way that creates value for ourselves? So we know that our engagement with technology can support cognitive, social, and economic goals. But to make good decisions about when to use technology, we need accurate metacognition, the ability to know what we know. What this question is going to talk about is what happens to our ability to understand ourselves when we over-rely on technology. So in this study, we recruited 252 participants who completed a 10-item trivia quiz. 10-item trivia quiz, and they were assigned to one of three conditions. They were either assigned to the Google condition, where they were asked to use Google to find all of their answers. Or they were placed in the no Google condition, where they were told, although you may be tempted to do so, do not use Google to search your answers. In a third control condition, they were not given any instructions about how to complete those answers. And upon given those instructions, they completed this task where they had to answer 10 questions based on the instructions they were provided, and they were given corrective feedback at the end of after each answer. What we wanted to know was how their cognitive self-esteem changes as a response to the condition that they were in. So in general, self-esteem is how you perceive yourself, your overall sense of self-worth. So cognitive self-esteem would be how you perceive your own cognitive abilities. The scale was developed to measure your cognitive self-esteem. These are questions like, I am good at thinking, my mind, I have a better memory than most people, and when I don't know the answer to a question right away, I know where to find it. And this gives us an assessment of how people view their own cognitive abilities. We also measured their response accuracy, so we wanted to make sure that we accounted for the fact that some people would get more wrong and some people would get more right. So after controlling for response accuracy, so removing the contribution of response accuracy, we found this main effect right here. We found that when you use Google, to find your answer to these trivia questions, you tend to overestimate your own judgments of knowledge. You tend to think that you yourself are better able to think, remember, and find information simply by using Google to collaborate on these answers. And we see that this cognitive self-esteem is higher for individuals who use Google compared to individuals who did not use Google and who were not given any instructions. So what this tells us, here Google represents a familiar source. In a different study by someone named Adrian Ward from UT Austin, he found that this effect doesn't happen when people use an unfamiliar search engine like Lycos. So something about using this familiar source that perhaps is seen as an extension of yourself because of how often you use it may contribute to this blurred boundary between what you know and what the device knows. And across my research, we studied this in a few different ways to establish this effect. We found in one study that when people use their personally owned device, the device they brought into the lab, they tend to have higher cognitive self-esteem after taking that trivia quiz than if they were given a lab-owned device, a control device that they were unfamiliar with to complete those answers. We also found that this effect depended on the modality of their technology use. When they use a mobile device, something that they perceived as being able to travel with them, we saw inflated cognitive self-esteem, higher cognitive self-esteem here, let's see, modality compared to smartphone and laptop. We see that in general, people had higher cognitive self-esteem when they used this mobile device compared to when they used a stationary device. And as I mentioned previously, when they used their own phone, they had higher cognitive self-esteem than when they used a lab-owned phone. We also found that people who receive immediate answers to these questions tend to report higher cognitive self-esteem than people who receive the answers after a delay. So here we can see that people's judgments of their own knowledge, of how smart they were, had something to do with how quickly they were able to access the internet. When they had immediate access, they judged their knowledge as higher, that they thought that they knew more about the topic, than when they had delayed access or when they had no access. And we found that this effect attenuates, it goes away, when people use a device that is not necessarily seen as an extension of themselves. In this study, we found that when individuals used a search engine to find answers, they reported higher cognitive self-esteem than when they used a digital agent or when they didn't use anything at all. So in this sense, we can kind of see that when a device is seen as an other, as we tend to imagine digital agents to be, then this overestimation of knowledge goes away. This suggests that when we completely rely on technology that we view as an extension of ourselves, it becomes difficult to differentiate between what you know and what your device knows. So when we feel as if technology is an extension of ourselves, the boundary between who we are and who our technology says we are starts to blur. How does interacting with technology that we view as extensions of ourselves, such as personalized or immersive technology, influence our behaviors? We know it influences our perceptions of ourselves, but does it influence our downstream decisions? So in this study, we focus on the context of recommender systems. AI has enabled the development of recommender systems to make data-driven suggestions based on, to extent, predicting a user's preferences based on their personal data. AI-based recommendation systems are embedded in everyday platforms such as Netflix, Spotify, and Amazon. In the case of Spotify, when you receive your Spotify Wrapped, you are able to understand yourself by viewing the infographic that Spotify provides about your data. In the same way, Spotify makes recommendations about what you should listen to on the basis from your understanding of what you watch. In reality, within recommender systems, they consider many factors when producing a recommendation, including factors that reflect users' own interests and also factors that reflect companies' interests. And companies rarely disclose their priorities in personalized algorithm recommendations. This enables developers to strategically incorporate their priorities into recommendations without user awareness. In fact, all major technology platforms such as Netflix, Amazon, and Spotify include revenue-maximizing signals in their recommender systems under the guise of personalization. So here we see that our inability to understand what's happening behind the black box of technology use is contributing to our misunderstanding of what technology is doing. So in this context, we wanted to understand the concept of self-endorsement. Because recommender systems incorporate personal data, it allows for the possibility for people to believe as if those recommendations are something that we ourselves would have endorsed. So this concept of self-endorsement was originally established in the context of VR and demonstrated that interacting with an avatar, here we can see in this example, when participants interacted with an avatar, and that avatar that was representing themselves was wearing a branded shirt, they reported having higher brand attitude and purchase intention of that brand compared to if they saw that brand on some other avatar that was sitting across from them. So here we can see that technology has qualities that permit hyper-personalization, which we now know can make it difficult to differentiate between what we know, what we think we know, and what the device thinks we know. So this led us to our study. We wanted to see if this worked beyond VR, if this worked in the context of classic recommender systems that we see on a daily basis in our world. In this study, we had 293 participants first complete a personality assessment, kind of like a BuzzFeed article, that asked them questions to gauge who they are and what they wanted out of their consumer choices. And then users operated three different recommender systems to aid in the selection of travel choices. We told them to imagine that they were going to go on a trip and to make decisions that aligned with what they would choose. So in the study, we had three different conditions. Everyone saw one of these versions once. So each person saw three versions. In one condition, they saw a self-endorsing version that they believe took their personality assessment data and made decisions, made recommendations based on that data. In another condition, in the other endorsing condition, this is a version, they were told that it was a version that was programmed on the basis of other people's personality assessments and recommends travel choices that previous users are most likely to endorse. In a third condition, it was a control condition, where they were told that this this version of this digital assistant was, or this recommender system, is not programmed with personalized data and only makes decisions at random. In reality, all three of these systems were making decisions at random. None of them used personalized data to inform the recommendations that were made. We wanted to determine whether people would be more likely to select the default recommended option when they believed the content was personalized to them. We also wanted to determine whether we can use this strategy to shift people's decisions toward our own priorities. In this case, our priorities were sustainable decisions. So here we can see in this study that people were given 19 categories, one of which was a rental car. They saw four different options. One of those options were recommended to them and were selected as the default option. And another one of those options, randomly, was something that we described as eco-friendly. We wanted to see if people were more likely to accept the recommendation when they were in the self-endorsing condition, and whether this influenced their tendency to choose eco-friendly choices. Here's what we found. Related to the recommendations that people accepted, we found that when they were working with an agent that they believed was making suggestions based on their personalized data, they tend to accept more of those recommendations. And we saw no differences between the other endorsement condition and the control condition. So only in the case when participants believed that this recommender system was programmed with their personal data did they choose to defer to that device for making their decisions? We also found a similar effect for eco-friendly recommendations. We found that when individuals were working with an agent that they believed to be self-endorsing, they were more likely to accept options that were also eco-friendly, regardless of how sustainable their values actually were. So here, this suggests that technology that individuals believe tailors content to them have a powerful capacity to sway decisions, even when those algorithms do not personalize content and when they recommend options that serve the designer's own interests. So we've established that when we constantly rely on technology, it can influence our perceptions of ourselves and the decisions that we make. We also know that stakeholders such as corporations, individuals, and countries are embedding their own interests into technology that we believe is personalized to us. At the same time, access to digital technology is becoming more and more critical to daily functioning. So how can we use technology in a way that creates value for ourselves? So in order to make this point, we need to establish the point of the importance of digital access. Even in the face of threats to our perceptions and behaviors, reliable access to digital technology is a modern form of sovereignty. It empowers us to build community, it generates social capital for us, and it creates real economic opportunity. We also find that individuals from historically marginalized groups tend to modify technology in a way that allows them to expand their social networks beyond what was possible in person. In one study, researchers found that Black and Latino users are more likely to use social networking sites to maintain and expand their social networks, while white and Asian users tend to rely on face-to-face communication. So in some ways, technology allows us to overcome certain barriers to equity to create social capital and benefits for a larger proportion of individuals. There's also research that suggests that older adults who learn to use the internet reported improved mental health outcomes, which was driven by increased social contact and cognitive stimulation. So because technology has the capacity to keep us connected when we may not be able to connect, it provides a powerful way for benefiting our mental health outcomes. There's another study that showed us that temporary loss of internet access among low-income individuals leads to increased stress and disrupted communication with employers, schools, and networks. So disrupted access to technology creates barriers for people trying to reap the benefits of technology use, both socially, economically, and cognitively. Across this, it suggests that digital access is a form of social infrastructure. It's vital for resilience, for equity, and well-being, especially among historically marginalized populations. Yet, these benefits come with certain barriers for those marginalized individuals. Because AI is built by humans, algorithms tend to replicate social inequities that we observe in the real world. An example of this is algorithmic skin tone bias. When an algorithm's design produces outcomes that consistently disadvantage users on the basis of the color of their skin. We've seen biased healthcare algorithms that prioritize white patients over Black patients. We see facial recognition algorithms that are more likely to misgender dark-skinned individuals. And certain optically activated water sensors do not tend to work for darker skin tones. So we conducted a survey to determine whether these algorithmic barriers resulted in lower levels of adoption among those individuals, in this case with darker skin. We recruited 843 people. We tried to get an equal distribution of a variety of ethnicities and therefore skin tones. And the average age for this was about 37 years old, so a general population. And we asked them to report how often they use these image recognition algorithms. These image recognition algorithms are the things like what you use for your phone to unlock, things like how to log into your finances, things like social media filters, and image sensors, like the ones that you might see with water faucets. And what we found was that despite these algorithms working less well for those individuals with darker skin, those individuals use image recognition algorithms more frequently than individuals with lighter skin. We also found that this effect was driven by reinvention. So here we see something called a mediation analysis, where we are able to evaluate the relationship between skin tone and image recognition algorithm use and determine whether something else better explains what's happening here, that relationship. And what we found is that reinvention does explain the scenario where individuals with darker skin use image recognition algorithms more, despite it working for them less well. Reinvention is when individuals adapt or repurpose an innovation to better suit their needs or values, often leading to uses that differ from the original intent of that innovation. And rather than adopting an innovation as is, through reinvention, users can actively reshape this innovation to enhance its relevance and utility in the context that they're using. So what we found happening was that participants with darker skin tones engaged in reinvention of image recognition algorithms more than individuals with lighter skin tones. And participants who engaged in reinvention were more likely to use image recognition algorithms. Here we can see the relationship between tendency to reinvent in these different contexts of image recognition algorithm use and as a function of skin tone. And we found that as skin tone darkens, there tends to be more reinvention that is incorporated into their daily use. We also had some evidence to suggest that that individuals with darker skin tones and greater algorithm awareness are more likely to engage in reinvention with image recognition technology and thus were more likely to use image recognition algorithms. In this case, algorithm awareness is the degree to which an individual at a basic level understands the underlying factors that contribute to an algorithm's decision. And when people knew more about how an algorithm operated, then especially when those individuals had darker skin tones, they learned to reinvent, which led to them using these technologies more, despite the fact that it works less well for them. So here we see that having an awareness of how algorithms operate underlies the ability to adapt technology to fit our needs. Those with greater awareness of how algorithms operate tend to be more able to reinvent technology to serve their needs, allowing those individuals to use and benefit from technology more, even when that technology does not inherently serve them best. So, through these examples, we can see that in general, people have difficulty differentiating between themselves and their devices when judging their own cognitive ability, and this happens particularly when they feel as if that device represents an extension of themselves. We also know that stakeholders can and do imbue personalized recommender algorithms with information based on their self-interests to inform consumers' decisions without their awareness. However, algorithm awareness and reinvention provides a mode to overcome the barriers associated with technology use, but it requires frequent use. In order to develop strategic skill, we need to interact with our technology, we need to not avoid it, and we need to use it in a way that's productive towards our goals. So through these experiments, we see that strategic engagement with technology is essential. Too much reliance can distort our perceptions, too little, and you might miss out on its cognitive, social, and economic benefits. Yes, algorithms can be designed with harmful intent, but with awareness, we gain power. The power to resist manipulation and to use technology in a way that truly serves us. So as you navigate the digital world, do it with intention. Master technology before it masters you. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.